to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 454, to be broadcast on Wednesday, September 10th, 2025, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Yo.
If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment, and she might be able to get back to you as well as I. Yeah. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live right now, you can just leave your comment down here below, or you can just send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. How fast is too fast on your e-bike? Why do I bring this up? Because the city of New Haven has, effective 10-1-2025, says e-bikes with no pedals and batteries over 750 watts but under 3,500 watts will now be defined as motor-driven cycles. A valid driver's license will be required to operate that machine, and e-bikes over 3,500 watts are expected to require registration and insurance similar to motorcycles. We'll get into that in just a minute, but anyway, that one came across my feed today, so I thought I would talk a little bit about e-bike speed, but we'll get there. We'll get there. More in the show. And the Vuelta goes political. Really? Do we really need that in bicycle racing? Yeah, we had a little interruption in one of the Vuelta stages this past week because of protesters getting onto the course, and somebody went down, and it's just a big mess. And it was the Palestinian anti-whatever protests, war protests that's going on over there in the Gaza Strip. So anyway, just stay out of my bike race, please. Please? Anyway, they had to neutralize the race that day, which meant that everybody ended up coming in with a similar time, that the couple of guys that were away were no longer pushing real hard to stay away. They just came in by themselves. It's just a mess. It's just a big mess. Anyway, meanwhile, while we're on rant world here, because there's so many things to rant about, my God, it's just, it's crazy world we live in right now. Sean Duffy's at it again. You know who Sean Duffy is? Sean Duffy's the guy who took over the Secretary of Transportation and took away like the wonderful job that was happening in transportation, which was for all of us who are cyclists or pedestrians or anybody who does anything with transportation. Well, anyway, cities are making headlines removing life-saving rainbow crosswalks to appease the Trump administration. Some advocates are wondering if cities that install pro-police themed street art will be ordered to unpaint GOP-coded symbols too. These protesters, three protesters in Orlando made headlines over Labor Day weekend when they were arrested after allegedly chalked in a rainbow crosswalk that Florida Department of Transportation had recently removed. People get real. Anyway, moving on. And we also have, I'm not done yet, Executive Order 14168. You know what that one is? Well, it's, if you don't know what it is, USA Cycling has now jumped on the bandwagon and is banning transgender athletes from female categories beginning September 15th, 2025. The new USA Cycling rules align with the USOPC and federal directives. Yeah. Okay. So maybe we'll talk about that in the show too. We'll get there. I'm going on to a positive side. I can't rant anymore. The Vuelta 2 weeks down, 1 week to go. Been watching? It's a lot of fun. There's some good stuff on there. Remember, if you can't, if you do not have a subscription to a certain network that happens to be covering it really, really well, then you can always just watch it on YouTube. There are highlights every day on YouTube, so it's really good. Today's a rest day, so they're you know, resting up those legs, because boy, last week was just craziness, and yeah, as it always is. So hopefully everybody will be well rested and off they go into the final week. There will be a time trial, an individual time trial this week also. So there's lots of fun stuff ahead, and there are some nasty, punchy little climbs out there too. So we'll see what happens. And let's see, what else is on the positive side? Closer to Free Ride was this past weekend, and somehow the rain was avoided. That's what I heard from people who participated in it. Very big ride for cancer in New Haven that happens every year. Smilo, what do they call that?
Smilo Cancer Center.
Smilo Cancer Center.
It's part of Yale New Haven, and right. I think we should shout out to our friends who were there.
We had a number of friends there. Yep. Yeah.
Like Billy Dujak.
Yep.
And he was riding for Team Sheila.
Yeah.
And she, God rest her soul.
Yeah. He said it was a very emotional ride this year.
Oh, sure.
It was really, really hard because he was riding with Jim also.
Right. Jim is Sheila's husband.
Right.
And then there's our friend Kimmy DeBoard.
Yep.
Who rode a Sentry after having knee surgery last year. Go, Kimmy. And my friend Dave Waldberger, who I'm looking forward to having a nice ride with on Wednesday. He was there. I'm assuming he was monitoring.
No, always is.
Yeah. So he was there. He had a nice time.
Yeah.
And do you know of anybody else who went?
I'm sure there were others, but nah, I can't think of any off the top of my head. And let's see. And next Saturday, I will be going to a, hopefully, if it doesn't get canceled, a League of American Bicyclists basic clinic for teaching kids how to ride bicycles, which is kind of cool. I'm pretty excited about that. It's in Andover, Connecticut. So that'll be really cool. And then I also, on Saturday, I worked an event at the Mansfield Community Center, and it was a meet and greet for UConn women's basketball player KK Arnold. And I got a really nice photo, and I got to hang out with the sophomore star point guard. That was fun. I'm a basketball fan. What can I say? Anyway, really cool thing. Let's move on to Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips. I'll go back to this because there's some other things I kind of wanted to talk about. It goes with e-bikes and e-bike repairs and all that. So let's move on to another tip. And I have here Cyclocross 101 Fundamentals for First Timers. So this is from USA Cycling, the people that just initiated that horrible rule. But anyway, whatever. Everybody's playing a political game these days. USA Cycling coaches offer some basics of cyclocross training for beginning riders. So a few things you need to look forward to if you are attempting to do cyclocross this year. By the way, come on out to Mansfield Hollow, because Damned at the Dam is on, and it is on October 11th. It's a Saturday. And
Damned at the Dam?
That's what it's called. Oh, Damned at the Dam. Yes. It's part of Project Mayhem Cyclocross.
Should I wear a Halloween costume?
You could do that. Okay. Yes, you could do that. Okay. That is quite possible. So anyway, first of all, mounts and dismounts. Polish your technique. Cyclocross racers make their most energy-sapping errors right there when you get on and off your bike. So you kind of have to... Repetition is the answer. It's practice, 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 practice. So it definitely helps to polish your technique. Also, run early and often. Yeah, you might have to take a day that you're riding your bike and maybe get off your bike and do some running, because you will have to make a few steps off your bike and back on again. If you don't do that, I think you're going to find that you're going to get a lot of muscle soreness if you don't try to condition and transform your legs over for that sort of thing. And use good off-road shoes too. You need a nice set of, you know, mountain bike shoes, that sort of thing. Don't just settle for running shoes, because and your road cycling shoes aren't going to work either. So get yourself something that's more mountain bike and or cyclocross oriented too. That would help a lot. If you're first time at it, you know, you could, you do what you do, and you learn very quickly why I'm making these suggestions right now. And again, ride the kind of bike you use in your regular season, mountain bikes for mountain bike cross bikes and road bikes modified for off-road use for roadies. It'll address your specifics for the sport. You can ride on a road bike. Make sure it's your old one, because just in case you hit something hard and you don't want to break your bike. Anyway, I would recommend getting yourself a nice cross bike, or maybe even a gravel bike would work in this situation too. The gravel bikes tend to be a little on the heavy side, but they'll get you through. And, you know, it's just to get your feet wet and see what you think. See if you really like to do this sort of thing. And train hard and short. High intensity workouts, anaerobic threshold work, anaerobic intervals are the very, very important here. Be sure to include adequate recovery for your races. And remember, a cyclocross race is no longer than an hour or so. So those 3 to 6 hour training rides, you don't have to do those anymore. Nah, you're going to bring it right down. When I was training for cross, I would spend no more than an hour out on my bike. Sometimes a little bit more, but not usually. And what I would do is I would find a place to ride the bike to hone my skills and try to, you know, be able to handle sharp turns on greasy off-road and, you know, things that were tricky, loose gravel, sand, that sort of thing. And then I would finish my day up by doing some mounts and dismounts and running with my bike on my shoulder for short periods of time and just repeating it over and over and over again. So you can do a lot of different things to get yourself ready for cross, but first and foremost, what you need to do is you gotta sign up for the race. We do have a beginner's category at Mansfield Hollow, so you're more than welcome to give it a shot if you've never done it before. I have had people come in and give it a shot and say, I'm never gonna do that again. And I have other people that have done it and they're like, they finished, we'll call it dead last. We'll leave the F out. And
what's wrong with dead freaking last?
Yeah, dead freaking last. There you go. So, and they have come up to me afterwards and told me that they finished in that position. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. How do you feel? You can't wait to do the next one. It's a different sort of sport. It's high intensity, it's short, it's over with before you barely even realize it, although it seems like you're out there forever, even though you're only out there for maybe 40 or 45 minutes. But it's, you know, it's very demanding on the body. Best bike handling drill that you can do ever. And if you're thinking about moving on into the road racing category on your bicycle, this is a great way to hone up your skills before you enter yourself into your first, let's say, road race. So I just think that it's probably one of the best things for you as far as teaching you how to ride the bike. And I've had people come up to me years later and say, you know how you made me do cyclocross first season and I was really against it, and then I went out and raced my bike on the road. I said, that's the best thing that ever happened to me. Because you learn. When things get sketchy in a road race and people are going real fast and everybody's elbow to elbow and somebody goes down in front of you, what are you going to do? How are you going to get around it? How are you going to get through it? Are you going to be able to take a tumble just in case? And how are you going to protect yourself? You learn a lot of that in cyclocross. So anyway, that's my tip of the week. And I'm going to move on to, let's see here. Let's go directly over to, I'm not going to go to the e-bike repair yet, because I want to go to e-bike speeds, because this was brought up. It was brought up in a text this morning that was sent out by my Monday, Wednesday, early morning spin class, basically. One of the participants in it had sent the piece over about the city of New Haven and e-bike speeds and that sort of thing. So I went, you know, and the question went, well, how fast can you go on an e-bike? So I looked it up and I sent them over some basic information. And it can be anywhere. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, top speeds can be anywhere up into including 48 miles per hour. That would be a 3,000 watt e-bike, maybe a 3,000 to 5,000 watt e-bike. Apparently, they also make 5,000 watt ones, which will go 60 miles per hour, 8,000 watt bikes that will go 68 miles per hour. And why you would want to do that, I don't even like doing that in my car. And 10,000 watts, which will go 85 miles per hour. That's just total insanity on a bicycle. Makes no sense to me. Because the bike is not really, it's not a motorcycle, it's a bicycle. So anyway, it got me looking around at different options and ideas that were out there. And I figured I would bring this up just so you know. E-bike speed limits in the United States. So an e-bike does not have to be a registered vehicle at this time. And because of that, there are speed restrictions as far as how fast you can go on the bike before you have to have a license and a registration. Personally, if you don't know the rules of the road and you hop on an e-bike and you're out riding around just thinking that you're having a good old time, don't highly recommend that. I think you really do need to learn the rules of the road more so than any other time, because the e-bike has the capacity of keeping up in traffic in heavy traffic situations. So anyway, let's start here. Class 1 e-bikes. These are pedal-assisted bikes where the motor stops assisting when the bike reaches 20 miles per hour. So the motor will get you up to 20 miles an hour. It'll help you up the hills. It's usually pedal assist. Well, it is a pedal assist bike. So it's going to sense either from your cadence and or your the amount of pressure you're putting on the pedals as to how much power it's going to give you. And that will be a class 1 e-bike. Very, very common. Class 2 e-bikes also are fairly common, but they also have a throttle. So you can assist up to 20 miles per hour. So you could actually ride the bike without pedaling. Not so much recommended there, unless of course you're using it for commuting and it's helpful for that. A class 3 e-bike, these are pedal assisted bikes, but they can assist up to 28 miles per hour. So 28 miles per hour is pretty fast, especially when you take a look at pedestrian-oriented areas where the speed limit is probably right around 25 miles an hour, sometimes 20 miles an hour. So they can go really, really fast. By the way, Class 3 e-bikes at 28 miles per hour, please stay off the bike trails with these. Please, please, please do not go on bike trails at 28 miles per hour. It's dangerous. It's irresponsible. And, you know, somebody's going to get hurt. And it could be you on the e-bike, but it probably more so will be someone else either on a bike or walking. If you're going to go that fast, then go into traffic where you belong. That's how I feel about it. Of course, we get lots of opinions here at Bicycle Talk, so there's one of them right there. But let's go back to this, how fast can an e-bike really go? So a lot of that information came off of there, but If you take a look at those USA e-bike speed limits, you really shouldn't be going more than 28 miles an hour on your e-bike, because that's where the classifications are. And there are some states that do not allow class 3 bikes, the 28 mile per hour bikes. They only allow the class 2 bikes. After that, there becomes a question of whether or not you should be licensed and registered, and that crosses over to the moped idea, which was something that was, oh, they're still around. They're very popular, more gasoline-powered type vehicles. They were, it's funny, back when we had all these gas crises back in the 70s, people were like flocking to mopeds because, you know, the price of gas was up, the lines. It wasn't even that the price of gas was that high. It was that the lines going to the gas stations were so long that people were looking for an alternative. So mopeds became very popular. So what's the speed difference between an electric bike and a regular bike? Regular bikes depend on how quickly a rider can pedal. Typically, this average is around 12 miles per hour for most people. E-bikes can, however, reach over 50 miles per hour if legal restrictions permit, which they do not in this state. I know that. Unfortunately, such speeds are illegal on public roads. Beginners on traditional bikes typically average about 12 miles per hour, while more experienced riders can sustain a 20 to 24 mile per hour speed. On the roads in the U.S., electric bicycles are limited to 20 to 28 miles per hour, while the speed potential depends on motor power. If you were riding in the Vuelta right now, you would be averaging 32 miles per hour. Those guys are fast. They're really fast. An e-bike allows you to maintain higher speeds without tiring easily, although it cannot exceed pedaling a traditional bicycle's maximum motor limit. So, for example, you can get a commuter bike or a mountain bike, and they could go up to 28 miles per hour. So that is definitely a big question mark when you're looking, if you're looking to purchase an e-bike. You want to, you know, how fast can you go legally without having to get yourself in trouble with a license and a registration for the bike, which can become more costly. And, it's probably not a bad idea if you're going too fast, but that's beside the point. So if you take a look at a 250-watt electric bike, and you can see they have 250-watt motors, 500-watt motors, 750-watt motors, and 1,000-watt motors. There's a lot of different ways you can go here. 250-watt motor, e-bike can reach 20 miles per hour on level ground, and it's ideal for city commuting, that sort of thing. And a 500-watt e-bike could reach up to 25 miles per hour on flat terrain, offering an ideal mix of power and speed. So maybe if you're in a hilly area and you need a little bit more power because of the hills, you could go to a little bit bigger wattage bike because it'll make it easier to accomplish the hills. And then you go up to 750 watts. I've been looking at all this lately because I'm looking at the possibility of getting a kit and converting a bike over. 750-watt bike can reach 28 miles per hour, ideal for more intense rides. And that would be probably more in a direction I would look for if I were building my own e-bike. I would look at a 750-watt motor just because we are so hilly around here, and that would help a lot on the hills. And then there's the 1,000-watt e-bike, and this seems insane to me, but a 1,000-watt e-bike can reach speeds up to 35 miles per hour when riding on flat terrain, making it ideal for off-roading and hills. So, yeah, you could go to a 1,000-watt motor. That's a pretty big motor. I think you're going to find that more of the stock bikes tend to be down around the 500 or maybe even possibly 750-watt area. So, it depends on what you're looking for. And of course, this chart goes on forever. How fast does a 1500-watt e-bike go? 1500 watts can go up to 40 miles per hour. And if you like going fast, I guess that's good. But at that point, you really have to start drawing a line. Because if you start going at those speeds all the time, too, I'm going to have to start thinking really hard about maybe changing your helmet over to more of a motorsport helmet versus a bicycle helmet. Because the bicycle helmets work, and yeah, they can work at speeds up to 50 or 60 miles an hour because that's why people wear them when they race. But, you know, it's just, it's a lot of speed. It's a whole lot of speed. So a 2,000 watt bike can reach 45 miles an hour. A 3,000 watt bike can reach 48 miles per hour. If it doesn't have a speed limiter on it, you know, that's the other thing. These things can be governed to a certain degree. And a 5,000 watt, I had no idea they even made 5,000 watt electric bikes, can go 60 miles per hour on level terrain without obstructions such as hills. And an 8,000 watt e-bike, I've just never seen these, can travel 68 miles per hour. Why would you? And that 10,000 watt electric bike can reach 85 miles per hour level surfaces without restriction from any brakes. Oh, it just makes no sense. That's the other thing you have to look at, you know, when you're starting to reach these speeds, you are going to be looking for a bike with fairly high performance brakes. So definitely disc brakes in this situation. And you're going to be burning through brake pads pretty fast on a bicycle. So, you know, those are all things to consider when you're doing something like this. I think that you need to treat all of this with a certain amount of respect and sensibility. That's really my conclusion. They e-bikes provide a great ideal combination of speed and efficiency, makes them a great option for someone who is just getting back into cycling again or just starting out and needs a little assistance. Maybe someone who is working on their fitness and they haven't been doing anything for a very long time. The e-bike will help get them there, and yet they'll still have to use some effort, some physical effort. So commuter friendly, big time. Absolutely. If you're commuting on your bike and you're carrying extra weight on the bike, or you're, you know, buying groceries at the grocery store, an e-bike makes a lot of sense. It really does, because it's so easy to pull the extra weight of a trailer or to carry extra weight on a pannier, that sort of thing. I think they make a lot of sense, and I know one is in my near future. I'm holding out at this time, but I am looking very, very closely at the possibility of one. So that's a little bit of fact about e-bikes. So a few things that you might want to know about them, and you know what, if you're thinking about an e-bike being in your future, this is definitely good information for you. So that moves us on to, now we can look at 7 essential items for your electric bike repair kit. Because remember, it is still a bicycle and you're still going to have some issues that you would have with a bicycle. So it's really important that you have some sort of a kit with you to help you with taking care of the bike. Regular maintenance has to be done on the bike. You have to clean it occasionally because you don't want a lot of grit and grime on it. You have to make sure that the chain is lubricated. And you are also, and I'm going to really, really, really stress this part of it too, you really have to check the brakes often on these, because you are riding a bike which is considerably heavier than your regular bike is. So it's going to require more friction on the pads of which to stop you because of the extra weight that you're carrying. And so that's really important. Your e-bike battery is a very essential part, and it's probably the most costly part of the bike, because the batteries are hopefully lithium ion at least batteries, or lithium iron batteries now are found on a lot of on some of the newer e-bikes. And you want to just make sure you maintain the battery well. Now, when you're maintaining battery, the recommendation on batteries, all batteries, not necessarily just your e-bike battery, also your electric car battery, your phone battery, you want to try to keep your battery somewhere between 20 and 80% on your charge, and that will maximize the lifespan on it. So that's important. And it's so bringing it all the way up to 100% each and every day is probably not as recommended. So, you know, plan out your trips accordingly on that, because some of these bikes can travel as much as 60 or 70 miles with assist. So you can go a long ways on them. And if you're, you know, your regular ride or your commute that you're doing is under 30 miles, then, you know, you don't have to charge it all the way up to 100%. So you can maintain your battery well that way. That's really helpful. And don't be afraid to go get your bike looked at by the local bike shop, because even though they may be like e-bike snobs, that happens, by the way, and there are bike shops that look, they don't look, I'm not going to say they're going to look down on you when you roll in with your e-bike, but they are not, they're not going to see you in the same way as they feel they are on their bikes. I am not one of those, but that is something that I have seen in the past. And when I was attempting to sell e-bikes back in the early days, I was snobbed out of more bike shops than I got my feet in the door of. So no one even wanted to know about it. Now they all have them in stock. Funny how that works, right? But anyway, so things that you need to carry with you. You got to carry that spare tube. You got to carry either a CO2 or a small mini pump or something like that, just in case you get a flat. You might want to bring along a chain tool, because chains break, and especially when they have that kind of torque on them. So you definitely want to do that. Maybe a set of Allen wrenches, so you can, you know, tighten things or whatever you need to possibly adjust, that sort of thing. So there's definitely a few things that you want to do. Multi-tools and screwdrivers are great. You want to make sure that, you know, you keep your handlebars tight. There's just things that are going to vibrate loose a little bit more, a little easier than they would on your regular bike, just because you've got all this extra weight and stuff. So that's certainly there. And I would carry some spare links with that chain tool too, just in case. You just never really know. Electrical tape and cable ties. I didn't think about that. They're essential for managing electrical and wiring components of an e-bike. Electrical tape helps insulate, protect connections, while cable ties are used to secure loose cables. So there you go. Additional battery or portable charger options. Yeah, so if you're going on a longer ride, an alternative power source is certainly a big, big help. You're not going to get it from a solar panel, unfortunately. You're going to have to probably carry a spare battery with you, which is going to increase the weight of the bicycle, so that's going to be a problem. And charging stations may not be really the answer with an e-bike, because no one really has a fast charger on these things. These things may take as much as 6 to 8 hours to recharge the battery, and that would be a long time to wait until your next time you get back on the bike. So definitely you want to keep an eye on that and be cautious about it as far as where you're going, when you last charged. We talked last week about charging your DI2, your derailleur systems, and why you have to remember to do that. This is an entirely different game here, because it's when you're charging a shifting system, the shifting systems do not take as much power as an electric motor does. So those batteries will last a lot longer, but these are definitely going to be, you're going to be charging them almost every day. The other thing you can do is, if you have a longer ride, like say you're commuting to work and it's a fairly long ride, just carry a charger with you. And then when you get to work, you can charge there. And then by the time you're ready to ride back home, you'll be all fully charged and ready to go again. So there's a lot of little tricks you can do as far as that goes. But I would say that you just have to plan your trips accordingly, because the last thing you want to do, and I have done this, is because I have a very antique e-bike from many, many years ago, is get halfway out on your trip and have the battery die and then have to pedal that extra heavy bike all the way back home. I've been there. I've done that. So it can happen. You just want to make sure you are paying attention to that. And of course, brakes. God, I can't talk enough about brakes. Keep your eyes on the brakes. And always, if you have disc brakes on the bike, order a second set of pads, maybe a third set of pads that you keep at home in your toolbox so that you, when you do wear them out, and you'll know because you'll hear bad noises coming from your disc, or hopefully you were smart enough to take a look at your bike and notice that you were almost out of brake pads before it happens. But anyway, I would always keep an extra set of pads or a couple of extra set of pads in the house too, as far as that goes. And that's what you do to take care of your e-bike. If your bike motor stops working, you need to check all your connections, check the battery, and you need to, be aware of your battery health and how much you've used it. So there's a lot of little things that go along with it that are different than a regular bike, but there are so many things that are also the same as a regular bike. So, good luck to you if you're looking at going for an e-bike. That's just some information that I hope you can use and I would share with you today. And we will move on to the next subject here. I don't know if I want to touch that one. So we got the crosswalk dilemma. Now, the reason I talk about the crosswalks a lot, because they kind of fall in place with the cycling community, because where there are crosswalks, there are many people. Where there are many people, there are often bike trails or streets that will allow a bike path of sorts or markings on the streets. So they kind of work with one another. And what has been really good lately is I'm starting to see, and not everywhere, but I'm starting to see more people paying attention to more, municipalities paying attention to very, very visible crosswalks, because the visibility of the crosswalk is key to letting the person who is driving the motorized vehicle know that there's a crosswalk ahead. And we recently had a new pavement put down on our road, and they redid the crosswalk, which is something that's part of a trail that goes along the top of the dike from the dam. And I had mentioned to them that could you just extend the lines down the other side? It's kind of on a big hump. And could you just extend the lines down so you can see, we can see better as to where the crosswalk is when you're driving a car? They did not do that, but they did put some like hashes in the road in paint, and they put up signs that said crosswalk ahead. And it really increased the visibility of the crosswalk tremendously. And I think that is anything that can distract a driver of a motorized vehicle or even a driver of a bicycle or an electric bicycle, that there are people that might be walking in front of them. I think that's a good thing. So more visibility. But I have seen the European model. I've seen a number of European model crosswalks. Not very many, but they're out there. And they tend to not be 3 or 4 feet wide or even 6 feet wide. They tend to be more like 10 or 12 feet wide. And visibly, it just gives an entirely different experience. So that's why I mentioned the crosswalk thing. And the thing about, this removal of the rainbow crosswalks to me is, obviously someone's got a bug up their butt about the representation of the colors and why they're there. Hey, my bike shop was called Rainbow Cycle Sport. What's the big deal? But anyway, I find them to be probably more distracting to drivers than a traditional crosswalk because of the bright colors. The bright colors are nice. They work. They grab your attention and they let you know that there's a crosswalk there. So But, you know, we have a current administration that is not into promoting anything that's other than the heterosexual world. And that's just the way they are, because they're afraid for some reason. I don't know why. But removing rainbow crosswalks will not make the there's an article on Streets blog. It's by Kia. She's great. So, you know, removing those is just really not going to make our streets safer. It's actually going to make them more dangerous. So, you know, maybe decorative crosswalks is the right idea, not the traditional ones. But hey, what can we say? That's, you know, Florida is enforcing this. And if you do that in Florida, you're going to get fined or arrested for defacing the road. It seems ridiculous to me, but it's what it is. And, you know, we need more visibility for vulnerable users, not less visibility for vulnerable users. That's really the answer here. And I'm sorry if it offends you, but it's important, because when I'm riding my bike, I want to be safe. And which brings us to why more communities are reconsidering speed limits from a pedestrian's perspective. This also comes from Streets blog. Same idea, where there's communities now that are starting to pay attention to crosswalks and slowing traffic down, because it makes a huge difference in traffic fatalities, pedestrians being hit, cyclists being hit. We really have to start slowing everybody down. And the more efficient vehicles we make and the more high-powered vehicles we make, they just don't make sense anymore. Unless you're up on a super highway of some sort where there is a speed limit that is up in that level, there's no point in it whatsoever. And it appears that many people routinely drive 5 to 10 miles per hour above the posted limits right now. So what we really need to do is focus on bringing them down at 30 miles. So small changes in vehicle speeds lead to dramatic changes in the chance that a pedestrian or cyclist may survive a crash. And an impact of 20 miles per hour, there's an 18% risk that struck pedestrian will be severely injured. At 30 miles per hour, that risk increases to 50%. And at 40 miles per hour, it rises to 81%. Lower speeds are essential if we want to make our neighborhoods and cities safe. So we have, in 2013, 19 states have changed their laws to give local governments more flexibility and authority to lower speed limits within their jurisdictions. In some cases, this means waiving the requirement for an engineered study and for state approval of specific changes. One of those states is our state, Fran, Connecticut. Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire and New York are all states that will not require state approval for specific changes. I need to bring this up to our local governments here, because they all complain about having to bypass, not being able to bypass the state DOT when they're trying to do things like this. Well, guess what? There might be a law. I'll look it up. I'll find out. So, if that guidance is not required or needed, then basically the towns can do whatever they want, which I like that idea a whole lot. So that's why a lot of other communities are also reconsidering speed limits from pedestrian perspective instead of automobile perspective. It's about time. What else we got? Let's go on to, it might be time to go off into the Vuelta. So the Vuelta has been amazing. There is a very close race going on right now. UAE is smoking hot right now. They have won 7 stages so far, and there have been 14. So 50% of the wins in the Vuelta this year have been dominated by the UAE, which is really amazing, because as much as they're winning all the races, team-wise, they're doing really well, but they are their main GC guy is in second place, not first place. And Visma is in first place right now with Jonas Vingegaard. So anyway, it's not by a lot. So it's been a very interesting race. There were some really nasty climbs this past week. And I've got a little bit of a rundown on that. I think I got that over here. Yeah, so we're going to start with stage 10. Stage 10 was it was a big climb to Puerto de Belaga. And after the first rest day, the stage began with 2 hours of furious pace before a breakaway could form. 30 riders went clear. And then as the red jersey group closed in, being the leader of the Vuelta, Vine followed a move from Pablo Castrillo from Movistar. And Movistar is always going to be prominent here because it's a Spanish team. So they tend to really try to send only their best there. They're not doing so good this year, but that's okay. Before forging ahead on his own. So Jay Vine just launched this attack that was amazing. And so it was an interesting stage for sure. And of course, Jay Vine won that one. And on stage 11 was when no official winner was recognized because they had to make the call because of the protesters. So race leader Jonas Vingegaard retained the red jersey on the complicated day, with Tom Pidcock earning bonus seconds on the final climb. And Tom Pidcock, they got away, but they had to neutralize the race. So it was determined there was no winner that day officially. And Juan Ayuso on stage 12 out-sprinted the breakaway partner Javier Romo from Movistar to win stage 12. And then we had on stage 13, we had, make sure I had Jayo Almeida from UAE Team Emirates emerged at the crest of the Angrelu as stage 13 winner, grabbing a few bonus seconds ahead of race leader Jonas Vingegaard. So they were together on the climb. It was brutal. They were attacking each other. It was a whole lot of fun to watch. Sepp Kuss put out a final blast, and he was in the front going as hard as he could, and he just flicked his elbow out and kind of looked over his shoulder, and that was the indication for Jonas to go, and off they went. But it was really, really fun bike racing to watch if you like watching bike racing, and I do. And Marc Soler on stage 14, that was the last one. No, that was the next last one. That was the Saturday stage. Soloed to a victory on top of the Alto della Farapano. And that was also another one of these great, you know, breakaway races. And Jonas took second after a hard-fought battle. And he is still now in the lead of the race. So all is looking well there. And on the last day, Mads Pedersen was in this enormous break. There were 47 riders in that break. I've never seen anything quite like it. And they put a solid like 5 or 6 minutes on the Peloton, on the red jersey group. And but Pedersen, who was not known really for doing something like this, ended up getting away with that group, and he ended up winning the finishing sprint because of it. So pretty cool. But Jonas is still ahead, and we are now heading into tomorrow, stage 16, and things are going to be interesting this week. There's some good mountainous riding coming up, which is very, very interesting. And anyway, there are some comments here. So they interviewed Jonas Vingegaard about the protests that were happening. And he says, people are doing it for a reason. It's horrible what's happening. Vuelta a España leader Jonas Vingegaard voices understanding for the pro-Palestine protesters. He commented on continued demonstrations at this Grand Tour. This is not the first one, by the way. This has been going on for the last 2 weeks. But there's Palestinian flags on display every day at the Vuelta. And there's some protesters that are trying to disrupt the race. This is common over in Europe, by the way. I remember when the farmers did protests at the Tour de France. And, you know, they blocked the roads with their tractors. I mean, this is not unusual to see races like this being used as a vocal point for you know, those who are unhappy with what's going on. So we've seen it before in the past. It's just very, very unfortunate. And unfortunately, on this one, this race has been targeted following several disruptions and riders being caused to crash in at least two occasions. So, you know, that part is not so good. You know, it's like, if you want to protest, I understand protesting. I'm a firm believer of it. But, you know, just don't end up causing a problem with the riders as far as their safety is concerned. The bike racing is dangerous enough. It doesn't need to be made more dangerous by things like this. And so Jonas made a comment, this might be the last time we have a stage winner. Jonas Vingegaard pessimistic about the Vuelta a España after pro-Palestinian protests paralyzed the race. And the riders say, we just want a race. Riders speak out against the pro-Palestinian protesters that caused the Vuelta a España crash. If it's peaceful, then there's no problem. Riders meet organizers and UCI Vuelta a España start line over safety and multiple pro-Palestinian protests. So the key moment, which Vingegaard was specifically asked to comment on, came after Movistar's Javier Romo crashed in a breakaway inside the final 60 kilometers after the Guardia Civil officer ran across the road to prevent a man holding a Palestinian flag from encroaching upon the riders. While unaware of what events actually occurred concerning Romo, Vingegaard did provide a comment on the ongoing situation. No, we didn't hear anything, or at least about what had happened. We saw Javier coming back with the crash, but we didn't know exactly what had happened to him, said Vingegaard. To be honest, I think we feel what's happening there, and I think people who are demonstrating there are just searching for a way to get to the news. And they think that it doesn't get attention enough, and they're really desperate, and that's why they do it, of course. It's unfortunately has to happen here at the Vuelta, but I think it's that they're just really desperate and they want to have more attention. So those from Jonas. And from there, we go to the official rankings here. And currently we have Jonas Vingegaard ahead by, he's only ahead by 48 seconds to Almeida. So, you know, really, really close. Tom Pidcock sits back another 2.5 minutes on that. But the number one, number two are right with one another, and they're both good climbers, and we got some serious stuff coming down the pike. Jonas is a very good time trialer, so maybe the time trial will make a difference this year on that one. Jay Hindley is in, he's in fourth place, and I'm not sure what the first name of Gall is, but he's in fifth place. And they're all sitting at a little over 3 minutes down on that. Now, to make a highlight note here, I just want to mention this. There is an American rider who rides for Israel Premier Tech, who is, his last name is Richitello. And he is 4 minutes and 53 seconds back on the leader. And right behind him is Sepp Kuss, who is also an American rider. So 7th and 8th are being positioned by American riders, which is really interesting to see. But anyway, we seem to have some good history at the Vuelta for some reason. We've had a couple of wins there, and it's interesting to see, totally. So anyway, that's the Vuelta, and here comes next week. We'll see what happens. I can't wait, and I will be talking about it more. Can UAE get another win? They got 7. They got 50% of them already. Pretty amazing stuff. So anyway, let's move on to, let's see, I got a brief clip here from Bicycle Retailer, just kind of giving you a rundown here, what's going on in general. Threatened tariffs caused spike in Chinese imports during the month of July. I guess we knew that. Is India a new source for the mass market in bikes? Well, it was, but that changed also most recently. Within the last week. Let's see, what else did I have in here which was interesting? The Kent Bicycle Corporation, which was going to be making more bikes here in the U.S., they're auctioning tools and machinery from their South Carolina bike factory. That doesn't sound very good at all. And it's just fired product safety commissioners, received congressional support in a court case. Because there were 27 members of Congress filed a brief to appeals court to support reinstating 3 Consumer Product Safety Commission members who were fired by President Trump after objecting to staff firings. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. It's just a crazy, crazy world out there right now. It really is sad, but it is true. So that's the highlights from the bicycle retail world. And now we're going on to events. Yeah, it's Vuelta week 3 coming up September. Let's see, all the way up to the 14th. And then that will be it. So next weekend and it is over. And I know it's just not, it's September now, but Project Mayhem Cyclocross has begun, and last weekend was the first one. So big shout out to the folks over at Airline Cycles for putting on a great event. I saw some friends of mine who did really well there, which is really cool. And there's going to be a lot more coming up because there are 7 races in that series. And we're race number 5, and we will be the Columbus Day weekend in October. So River Valley Cross Series, August 24th through October 19th, based in the Massachusetts area. Rocky Hill Cyclocross Training Series, there we've been through 2. We're looking for race number 3 in the training series on Wednesday evening at the dog park in Rocky Hill. And Sunday, September 21st, is the Southbridge Credit Union Tour Apakam Bike Ride for Land Conservation. Finishing points, it's still the Vuelta. Yay, it's still the Vuelta. Good bike racing. This is the last of the classics, though. Oh, well. We get the Worlds after that. Supposedly, Tadej Pogačar is pushing hard on that one. He wants a World Championship jersey. We'll see what happens. More big-time bicycle racing is at our fingertips, and the Vuelta goes political. Really? Do we need that in bike racing? Anyway, this clip from our friends at League of American Bicyclists. Bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. The League is making biking easier and safer option for more people, because when more people ride bikes, people are happier and healthier, and our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can help make more people know the joy of bicycling. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. You need to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride. And do your part. And hey, take the Pedal and Ride Challenge. Park your car one day and ride your bike instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. And I'm just going to leave off here. I'm running out of time. So this is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!